currently under construction. Pharaoh of House Valaniae had been overseeing the work taking place day and night to ensure the ships were ready for the invasion. The larger pieces of wood, which made up the framework, were lifted from the ground with magic and put into place, to be secured with manual labor afterwards. Up and down the shore, Elim's keen ears heard the sound of orders being given and received in perfect harmony. With their strength and magical talents, the elves could have themselves an entire fleet in weeks. Normally that would have been cause for celebration, but Elim couldn't even bring himself to smile. His days had been filled with dark thoughts and crippling doubt since Phelan had revealed the truth about Valinus. The original plan had been simple in his mind. Rhaenyra was to act as an ambassador and retrieve valuable information about the kingdoms of men, while Galenor and his companions broke Moliath free from Cor-Canoth. Allied with the dragon, Elim could finally unlock the secrets of Mount Garganathan and breed an army of dragons to invade Ilion. This would have greatly reduced any fatalities in the elven army. They were to start by taking Velia on Ilion's eastern coast and attack outwards from there. Valinus was supposed to be trapped in the Amber Spell in Elathia. From there he could be easily destroyed for good, ridding all of Verda of his threat. The timing of everything was still suspicious to the king. It fueled his doubt day and night, haunting his dreams and robbing him of sleep. For 40 years Valinus had been free, and no doubt scheming to spread his twisted evil across the entire realm. It couldn't be a coincidence that the elves had been planning to invade Ilion for that exact amount of time. Members of his own council had put those thoughts of invasion in his mind, and convinced him it was the right thing to do. A council that had been loyal for 1,000 years. If the worst was true, then Elim, and the entire elven nation, was playing into Valinus's machinations. But what could Valinus gain from having the elves take back Ilion? Did he want the destruction of mankind? To what end? Humanity would be far easier for the Dark Elf to conquer than the elves. Perhaps he merely wished for chaos to rule over the land, as it had during the Dark War. Trying to understand Valinus was a fruitless exercise. The Dark Elf was notoriously mad, having always claimed that he could hear the gods. He didn't even want to think about Rhaena. Even though she had only been in his life for a fraction of his time on Verda's Earth, his daughter had made quite the impression. Creating any offspring had been his way of showing that he, too, was making efforts to rebuild their society, as Adelandra and he had taken much criticism over the centuries for not practicing what they preach. In truth, Elim had cared little whether it was a boy or girl, prince or princess, for that was all they could ever be. As an immortal, he could rule forever, and he intended to. It was only in their absence, both Rhaena and Adelandra, that the king had felt the sting. He missed them, and he hated it. There wasn't time for these feelings. An entire country had to be invaded, a race of people defeated, and a mad elf to be dealt with. That thought only served to make him think of where Rhaena was right now. Elim focused solely on an elf in the distance, hammering on a metal bar by the orange glow of a forge. After a moment, it sharpened his mind and brought him back to the present. High Guardian Vara was by his side, dressed in full armor and cloak. The warrior gave his king a concerned look, no doubt having noticed his attention wander during Thero's tour of the beach. The patriarch of the Valaniae house stepped into view. "My lord!" Elim realized he had been asked a question, but he knew not a word of it. To save his king embarrassment, Vara gripped the hilt of his sword and stepped forward. "How many can they hold?" the elf asked. Elim's attention was split as he heard the sound of boots breaking through the tree line beyond the beach. A warrior whose name escaped him sprinted across the soft sand in full armor without a hint of exertion. She stopped in front of the group and bowed before whispering into Varro's ear. There was always a hierarchy to observe. The High Guardian ignored Thera's inquisitive expression and crossed the sand to his king's side. "Tygarn has made contact," he whispered. Elim nodded and swiftly turned to Thero. "Continue the hard work, Thero, and bring honor to the House of Valaniae." Thero bowed deeply, but the king was already in the process of throwing a crystal into the air. The magic-imbued stone exploded in a brilliant flash before leaving behind a black vortex lined with miniature bolts of lightning. Elim strode through the portal and into his palace, closely followed by Varro.
"The fleet will be ready soon," Varro commented.
Elin wanted to reply with a suggestion that it wasn't fast enough, until that sparked a thought he couldn't ignore.
"Could that be his intentions?" the king asked out loud.
"My lord?"
"Valinus." Elin couldn't quite put the pieces together. If you wanted chaos, if you wanted two sides to go to war. The king thought of his daughter.
"You're my greatest tactician, Varro. Think as if you were Valinus."
"That would be a dangerous thing, my lord," Varro quipped.
"He has my daughter attacked with the intention of killing her.
But why? He risks revealing himself and the hand.
But what if he hoped that such an attack would enrage the elves of Ada and press us into invasion before we are ready? We forego the dragons and years of further planning and just attack Ilion in retribution."
"You think we aren't ready?" Varro stated.
"I'm trying to think a step ahead of an enemy who has been plotting against us for 40 years, Elin replied.
"Perhaps Valinus thinks that mankind can defeat us if we attack prematurely."
"That would be another reason to have Princess Rhaena assassinated," Varro theorized.
"Without her information, we do not know mankind's true power."
"But what could he possibly gain from any outcome?"
Elin was struggling to keep his regal composure.
"Valinus may have control of the Arrakesh, but their force isn't nearly large enough to take on mankind or ourselves."
They were missing something vital, and it was driving Elin mad. Valinus had yet to reveal his real play in all of this, and the king knew it would prove costly.
"Perhaps Tygarn's presence in Ilion will prove valuable," Varro gestured to the double doors.
Elin bowed his head, acknowledging the High Guardian's subtle suggestion. The king entered the room that couldn't be penetrated by any other's magic, ensuring its privacy. With both hands, Elim gripped the diviner in the center of the room and allowed his consciousness to be pulled into the ether. Sitting in front of the king was the ghost-like image of his oldest advisor and most powerful elder.
"My lord,"
Tygarn bowed his head.
"You have reached Ilion's shores?"
Elim was in no mood for pleasantries.
"We are on the edge of a town called Darkwell," Tygarn explained.
"We will gather any supplies here and make for the Evermore, until we reach Vanguard."
"Make all haste, Tygarn. I do not think they will stay in the town for much longer."
Elin wanted to order Tygarn to discover as much information as he could while in their ancient land. But he needed Rhaena to be safe.
"Contact me again when you have news."
"Of course."
"Tygarn, should you hear anything else during your time amongst the humans, inform me immediately. There is more going on than we are aware. Of that, I am sure."
Tygarn bowed.
"My lord," his ethereal image faded from the black like smoke in the wind, leaving King Elim to his doubts.
Tygarn placed the diviner in his satchel and picked up his staff. He returned to the group, who in his absence had been keeping an eye on Darkwell in the distance. Without a word, the elves adorned their dark cloaks and hoods and made for the town under the cover of night. In Tygarn's eyes, Darkwell wasn't too dissimilar to the earlier towns built by the humans, before the elves left for Ada. They were certainly bigger and used a great deal more stone than wood, as they had 1,000 years ago. There were no structures big enough to rival anything in Elandril, however, but Tygarn silently applauded the humans for their towers and roads. The five elves crossed the stone bridge and into the streets of Darkwell under much scrutiny. The town appeared to be guarded by an unusual amount of soldiers. Their shields and cloaks bared the lion sigil of Namdor, showing their allegiance to King Makaris of Orith. The guards watched their every step and slowly walked along the bank to follow the elves into the town. Once they reached the streets, all five elves split up, taking the alleys and different streets to confuse the guards. In seconds, Tygarn was on the roof of a nearby house and watching as the soldiers conversed in furious dialogue before splitting up. They would never find the elves.
"They seem awfully suspicious of visitors," Azeric commented.
The lean elf was crouched behind Tygarn on the sloped roof, his approach as silent as the dead. Using his fingers to speak the silent language known to all elven warriors, Azeric signaled for Alwyn and Nalmar on the other side of the road to meet them further down the street.
"Where is Hela?"
Tygarn thought about the elf's predilection for violence and began to worry.
Azeric joined him in his search of the torchlit streets below. There was a chance Hela had foregone hiding and decided just to kill the soldiers. It wasn't the entrance Tygarn had in mind. Thankfully, the red-headed elf stepped out of the shadows and met the group outside a closed butcher's shop. Tygarn gave her an expressionless look that reminded Hela who was in charge, and that violence was not permitted. Yet. Tygarn wasn't sure yet how he felt about the idea of killing humans. So far, he had followed his king's orders and gone along with the invasion plan. But there was still a part of him that remembered how elves used to be. In Tygarn's mind, he could still see his people 1,000 years ago as clearly as he saw them now. They could birth entire forests with their songs and enjoy the delights of nature day and night. Now they were just efficient killers. In truth, Tygarn had hoped that after this new war, the elven nation might return to how they had been. But at what price? He thought. Why are we sneaking around? Nalmar asked. I thought we had the king's authority to announce ourselves as ambassadors. That would make things quicker, Alwyn commented. Tygarn replied, We will play that card when it best suits us. For now we will blend in and learn what we can. The elder checked the streets for any more guards. We should find shelter for now and gather supplies in the morning. The elves stuck together and moved through the streets of Darkwell in search of an inn. At this time of night, the town was quiet and dimly lit, making it easier to find the taverns. Tygarn followed as Eric's lead until they came across a selection of taverns that inhabited the center of the town, surrounding a large, oval-shaped building. These streets were alive with laughter and merriment, as men and women fell out of doorways and staggered into the streets with drinks in hand. The elves took a moment to observe the patrons through the windows of the various taverns. "Soldiers?" Hela asked. Tygarn used his sharp elven eyes to go over every detail of the men and women dressed in the same long coat. They had identical weapons, and they certainly moved like soldiers. At least the ones who weren't intoxicated did. Without any warning, the door swung open, and the group sunk into the shadows as two men wearing normal attire exited the tavern. "Damn greycoats!" the larger of the men exclaimed. "I can't believe King Macarius has given them refuge here." "There won't be any ale left in the whole damn town at this rate," the slighter man replied. "Well, they've already taken over the theatre." The larger man gestured to the oval building in the middle of town. The two grumpy men walked off into the night, and the elves returned to the window. Tygarn had heard of these greycoats from the reports over the last 40 years. Their purpose was noble, but their namesake was nothing but a murderer in Tygarn's eyes. "These are the greatest warriors in Ilion?" Hela asked, critically. "Among the best," Tygarn replied. "But do not underestimate the humans, in battle or otherwise." More of the greycoats stumbled out of the door, taking no notice of the elves. "How they defeated the dragons, I'll never know," Alwyn commented. Tygarn pulled his hood a little closer, feeling the lightest of raindrops. When given a common cause, humans are capable of a great many things. Tygarn had watched their kind emerge from the wild moors and build kingdoms. They had mastered speech and even made their own. These mud-dwellers and outlanders had conquered architecture, poetry, art, and even magic. Sadly, they had perfected warfare. This particular trait had been used against the noble dragons with terrifying results. Tygarn had left Ilion just after their war began, but the stories of war machines and other such evil contraptions had found Ada. "Are we to stay here?" Iseric asked, incredulously. "Indeed we are," Tygarn turned to Alwyn. "I would take advantage of your light feet. Find a way inside that theater and learn all that you can. Join us later." Alwyn nodded once and disappeared into the shadows of the alleyway without protest. As an elder on the council, it had been a long time since Tygarn had heard any protest his word. Organizing rooms to stay in had been relatively easy. A lie here and an extra coin there kept the questions at bay. But the stench of the place could not be bribed away. Humans had a distinctive smell at the best of times, but squashed together, drunk, in a tavern, added new aromas the elves found hard to stand. When they reached their sparse rooms on the top floor, Tygarn found the other three elves whispering among themselves. "Something perplexes you all?" the elder asked. The elves hesitated, but Iseric answered on their behalf. "We've just never seen..." The elf made a gesture with an open hand over his strong jaw. Tygarn chuckled.
You've never seen a beard.
A what?
Nalmar scrunched his face at the word. Human males can grow hair on their face, he explained with an amused smile.
I thought it was just in stories,
as Eric appeared disgusted at the thought.
I liked it,
Hela added, coyly. The night went on for a couple of hours before Arwen returned from his private errand. The elf removed his sodden cloak and balanced himself on the windowsill. Tygon had noted, on their journey across the Aedean, the young warrior was never content to sit normally, or stay still for any length of time, for that matter.
"What news do you bring?" the elder inquired.
"Greycoats from all over Ilion are coming here. Their leader, Lord Marshal Horvath, is inside the theatre. They have taken over every room behind the stage, as well as many of the local inns. Apparently the King of Orith has offered them sanctuary for a time. There were many talking about the events that led to their current state.
Did they mention the princess or the ranger?"
Tygon asked urgently.
"Only in the context of the battle," Alwyn quickly replied. "They don't seem to know about their presence in Vangarth from what I could gather, but the Lord Marshal appears to have been in recent contact with the King of Velia, judging by his conversation with his second-in-command." This changed everything. Though Tygon had struggled with his faith, it was hard not to believe that the gods were guiding them. They had arrived in a town with potential sources of information that could not be ignored.
"I'm never getting that smell out of my clothes," Hela commented with disdain and the agreement of her companions. Tygon ignored the interruption and fell back into deep thought. The presence of the Greycoats didn't offer any problems, but he wondered if they could be used to gain any advantage. If the Lord Marshal had been in touch with King Rengar of Velia, there might be valuable information to garner. The kings in these lands would no doubt have their spies, and it stood to reason that Rengar would be searching for Princess Rhaena, as they were. Arwen swept his wet hair over his head. "Did any of you see the man behind the bar? He had hair on his face." Tygon allowed the others their laughter before interrupting. "I'm afraid rest will have to wait." The elder thought of his king's urgency. "I would speak with this Lord Marshal and gather what details there are to have." The elder could see the protest marring their elegant features, but no words escaped their lips. His word was final and born of experience gained from a lifetime longer than all of their ages combined. The five elves made their way back through the streets of Darkwell, their identities concealed by their extensive hoods. The town was somewhat quieter now, with many of their taverns closed for the night. Even with their cloaks and hoods, Tygon was aware that the group stood out. The way they carried themselves was simply different, and though subtle, it was detectable.
"Which part of Exiled did you not understand?" a voice bellowed from inside the theatre.
The elves came to an abrupt stop outside the double doors, moments before they burst open and a man tumbled to the ground. The man slipped in the mud and stumbled to his feet with a glazed expression. He was older by human standards, with a white moustache and unkempt hair to match.
"Fennec!"
The man said the name as if it were dirt.
"You always were a little slow to the words finding your ears."
The older man wiped mud from his face and adjusted the sword on his belt, which hung between a scruffy long coat and mismatched armor.
Caleb Jourdain,
a younger man, though not by much, walked out of the theater in typical greycoat attire. "I suppose a man who couldn't learn to keep it in his pants could never learn when to keep his words in his mouth." The wide-set greycoat was quickly followed by a small mob of knights, each appearing eager to lay into the older man. Seeing them all together, Tygon noticed the similarities between the mob and Caleb Jourdain. Despite the intrigue behind the event, the elder did not have time for it.
"Darius," Fennec called to a knight with blonde hair and hard jaw. "See to it that Caleb here is escorted from the town and sent on his merry way. Go piss your life away somewhere else, you drunk."
Tygon stepped forward, and his elven companions moved with him. Without a breeze, their cloaks hung over them as shrouds, concealing most of their weapons, as well as their heritage. Fennec looked from one face to the next, bemused.
"This is greycoat business. On your way."
Tygon removed his hood, and the others followed suit.
"I am High Elder Tygon, of the Elven Council to King Elim Savari. I would speak with your Lord Marshal."
The mob was stunned into silence, none daring to move under the elf's gaze. It was not surprised at seeing an elf, however, the difference subtle but observable to Tygon's keen eyes. These men had seen elves before, just not so many, Caleb Jordaine simply rolled his head, stretching his neck and blinking hard.
"Then perhaps you'd better come in,"
a voice replied from inside the doorway. A man strode out with an air of command about him.
"I am Lord Marshal Horvath."
"We have much to discuss, and very little time, Lord Marshal. We are searching for Princess Rhaena, who I believe you have already met." Horvath hesitated, clearly wanting the discussion to take place inside.
"Yes, I have had the pleasure of meeting your princess. Indeed, her actions at Westphalian saved many lives. Perhaps we should go inside, away from prying eyes."
The Lord Marshal glanced at Caleb Jordaine. If it sped things along, the elder was happy to accompany the Greycoat.
"I know where she is," the disheveled knight announced.
All eyes fell on him, with Horvath swiveling on his heel to face the drunk.
"Ned," he glanced at the wide-set Fennec, "if he utters another poisonous word, you have my permission to run him through."
Tygon raised his hand to halt the sword already being drawn from Fennec's scabbard.
"If this man has knowledge I seek, then I would hear him out."
"He is drunk, my lord."
Horvath came to stand between elf and man. "He would say whatever he must to find a warm bed and shelter for the night." The drunk straightened his back.
"They are in Vangarth."
Caleb's words arrested Tygon's immediate attention. This was knowledge passed on to King Elim by Felin Haldor herself. The elven elder moved past Horvath and faced the apparently disgraced knight.
"From there they travelled into the heart of the Evermore, to Lirion."
"How do you know this?" Tygon asked.
"They were brought to us by Asher. He's a..." Caleb hiccuped. "Well, he's actually quite complicated, as it turns out."
There was another name the Elder had recently come by. The outlander who had been in possession of Paldora's gem and trapped in the Amber Spell for 1,000 years. Indeed, his was a story Tygon would like to hear some day.
"Who's us?" Horvath interjected.
"Rangers, like myself."
Caleb tugged on his tattered coat.
"Wait, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be telling you this part."
The ranger scratched his head and frowned.
"This part?"
Tygon echoed. "It seems we have much more to discuss than I believed." The elder looked from Horvath to the interior of the theatre expectantly. The Lord Marshal clenched his jaw and stared at Caleb.
"Let us get to the bottom of this together, my lord."
Tygon smiled and gestured for the old knight to accompany them inside.
"Elder?"
Nalmar came up close on Tygon's side and whispered,
"I can feel magic. Something approaches from... the north, I think."
The ancient elf had come to trust Nalmar's abilities.
"The same thing you felt as we passed Stowhold?"
"No, not as powerful. But it must be strong for me to feel it approaching. Whoever it is, their magic has been drawn from a powerful well."
Tygon nodded along.
"Remain vigilant. If this man proves true, we will leave at dawn."
Chapter 22 The Call of a Dragon. Gideon fell through his dreams, until his conscious mind became fully aware that he was falling through fog. This unique blend of reality and dream was dizzying and disorientating, but the confusion soon passed when he realized with no small amount of terror that he was actually falling through clouds. The constant rush of air in his ears gave way to the sound of a battle, and a large one at that. His body broke through the clouds to reveal a land he didn't recognize, at least not from the sky. A giant city dominated the landscape, surrounded by an army he had never seen before. Dragons flew in every direction, delivering death by fire and ice, while evading the giant projectiles fired from inside the city grounds. Gideon blinked, and he was no longer falling, but standing on the battlefield instead. The mage knew he must be dreaming, but he had never been so aware before. Everything felt so real, from the breeze on his face to the ground under his feet. The sky became dark with unnatural speed and filled with storm clouds that rumbled like angry gods. The heavens cracked, and lightning erupted from every cloud with malicious intent. Gideon's heart sank when lightning bolts exploded from above and struck the soaring dragons. The ground thundered under his feet, and Gideon looked towards the foreign city to see an army of thousands running at him. The mage held out his hands in panic, but the screaming army ran past him without notice. He didn't recognize any of their armor or the sigil they bore. The army didn't appear to be charging at another army
but they all had their eyes firmly fixed on the sky. That was when he saw it. Every 20 foot, there was a soldier with a tall spear, held upright, with a large green sphere attached to the top.
Chrysalith!
Gideon whispered under his breath. A torrent of fire tore through the ranks only 100 feet away, as a mighty green dragon swooped over the top. Gideon followed the dragon's flight, and recognized Raynal, the Emerald Star, immediately, though she was smaller than he knew her to be. The smell of burning clothes and melted flesh reached the mage's nose, and he cringed. Giant spears and enormous rocks were hurled from somewhere inside the city walls, creating chaos amid the dragon's flight patterns. The ground shook every time a dragon was struck and fell to the battlefield, crushing dozens of soldiers. An ear-splitting roar had Gideon spinning about, where a large black dragon was on all four legs and being overrun by soldiers with chrysalith spears.
"Meliath!"
Gideon yelled over the battle cries. The black dragon's head dipped as the anti-magic took effect, weakening him, while Gideon could only watch as the soldiers closed in with their deadly spears. A stream of ice came from nowhere and froze the soldiers in place, killing them instantly. The biggest dragon Gideon had ever seen dropped from the sky, in front of Meliath, and crushed the ice figures with his bulk. The dragon inhaled again, and a jet of fire spread across the battlefield, taking the lives of at least 100 men.
Garganaphan.
Gideon didn't know where the name came from, but he was certain that it was the identity of the dragon before him.
"Where am I?"
the mage screamed above the raging battle. Chaos surrounded him, and he realized the question should be, "When am I?" as Garganaphan had been killed 1,000 years ago in Elathia, before the Dragon War. Was he witnessing a battle from the Dark War? Gideon had no clue, but his surroundings made it hard to think straight. Lightning continued to light up the sky, every bolt searching for a dragon. Using a storm as a weapon was an incredible feat of magic in Gideon's mind. He looked around him for the caster, but instead he saw a soldier running directly at him. The mage stumbled backwards, seeing the spear of Chrysalith aimed at his belly. He was defenseless. He had no staff, and Abigail's wand wasn't attached to his thigh.
"No!"
Gideon's cry blew the vivid dream away, and he awoke, bolt upright. The mage was sitting on the grass in front of Mornblade. Rays of moonlight pierced the branches, bathing the magnificent blade in soft light. A heavy sigh Gideon had come to recognize as a dragon's came from behind him. Ilaga was lying close by, with his wings tucked into his sides, as if he too had been sleeping. The dragon's long neck stretched high, bringing his elongated head to tower over Gideon's.
"What was that?"
the mage asked, referring to his nightmare. Ilaga tilted his head, as if considering an answer.
"What was what?"
Adriel walked into the clearing.
"I..."
Gideon didn't know where to begin. The mage stood up and straightened his clothes, taking in the serene surroundings. Galanor was close behind Adriel as they entered the clearing, both elves regal in their approach, with perfect posture and handsome features. How was it that he, a human, could ever be a dragorn, he wondered.
"You have been asleep since yesterday," Adriel said. "I'm sure it all feels very confusing."
"And then some," Gideon added, rubbing his eyes. "How's the arm?" Galanor gestured to Gideon's left forearm. The mage examined the healed skin and nodded absently, trying to fix himself in reality again. The dream had been so vivid, with its sights, sounds, and smells. What was happening to him?
"What happened yesterday?" Gideon finally asked.
Adriel replied, "You were mentally connected to Ilaga at the time. Through his mind, you were then connected to every dragon in the Reach. That many voices and minds must have been overwhelming. Some of the earliest Dragorn experienced the same thing before we developed the training. You will need training, Gideon." The mage glanced at Galanor before facing Adriel.
"I don't have time to be trained. We need to return to Malaysai and free Adalandra. Then we need to find a way of getting word to the kingdoms of Ilion. They must be warned before the Darkerkin invade."
"Being a Dragorn is not something to be taken lightly," Adriel countered. "It is not a path you can easily walk away from. The call of a dragon cannot be denied."
"I am not Dragorn."
Gideon strode over to the only rock in the clearing.
"See?"
The mage pulled with all his might on the scimitar's hilt.
Adriel smiled and walked over to meet him. Observe. The elf gripped the red hilt and attempted to lift the stubborn blade. I told you. Galandavax laid a spell over Mornblade centuries ago. It can only be removed by a Dragorn when they are needed again. Even I cannot lift the blade. Gideon's shoulders sunk. Growing up in Corcanoth, he had dreamed of a life of adventure and destiny. To have a purpose in life beyond that of normal men had been his only desire. Now he just wanted to have Abigail back. Adriel's right, Galanor said. You should train, Gideon. This is an honor my people have dreamt about for 1,000 years. You shouldn't pass it up. Gideon shared Adriel's expression of surprise. It was the first time Galanor had agreed with the ancient elf instead of protesting to leave. The mage locked eyes with Ilargo and felt that familiar pull that he now knew was a call to connect on another level. The prospect of becoming a Dragorn was indeed exciting, but it also sounded like a long process. How long does it take to complete the training? Gideon asked. Adriel hesitated. Longer than a human lifespan. Probably best to start now, then, Galanor added, placing a heavy hand on Gideon's shoulder. Galanor had stayed with the new master and student for as long as he could before boredom set in. He wasn't like his ancestors. Galanor didn't have the patience to sit and watch Adriel teach Gideon the art of elven meditation. The elf needed to be doing something, to be on the move. He filled his time with swordplay, moving through his routines and stances. Even after 4 centuries, practice was required. It was easy to stop and marvel at the flying dragons, however, each more beautiful than the next. Raynal flew overhead, and it made Galanor think of his own queen. Adelandra needed saving from that hell. He knew in his heart that she was still alive. He had to believe that or succumb to his guilt. The elf looked back at the wall of trees that concealed Mornblade, where Gideon was receiving his first lesson. The way Galanor saw it, there were 2 ways the mage's training could go. Either Gideon would come around to Adriel's point of view and believe that the dragons should stay in the reach, or he could use his newfound connection with Ilargo to help them attack Malaysai. Galanor couldn't leave it to chance. The elf climbed atop one of the floating boulders with the need to act pressing on his mind. Who knew how long it would take for Gideon to master even the most basic of skills needed to be a Dragorn? What he did know was that Adelandra's time would be running out. If she wasn't dead already, the Darkerkin's cruelty would force her to find creative ways to kill herself. Crouched by the lip of the boulder, Galanor scanned the vast crater for any weaknesses he might have missed. His sharp eyes took in every detail of the almost sheer cliff face that wrapped around Dragon's Reach. There were no gaps or valleys to take advantage of. The thought of climbing out of the crater was a futile one, and he knew it. Even if he did make it past the vicious sandstalkers that lived in the Red Mountains, he would surely die of dehydration between here and Malaysai. Galanor hung his head in defeat. Everything he had done was for nothing. All the terrible acts on behalf of his people would be with him forever. The faces of the children, taken by the merfolk, flashed before his eyes and brought tears with them. The students, children all, in Corcanoth, who had fallen under his leadership. Tears ran freely down his cheeks, and the elf felt despair for the first time in his long life. Before he could fall any further into his dark reflection, his keen eyes caught movement in the distance. Galanor wiped his eyes and watched as Maliath took off into the sky with an entourage of dragons. They flew in a wide circle before heading out beyond the reach. What were they doing? Galanor practically flew down the boulder and the thick roots that attached it to the ground when he saw Adriel and Gideon heading for the small lake with Ilargo in tow. Maliath is leaving! Galanor shouted as he closed the gap. Adriel stopped by the edge of the lake and turned to regard Galanor without a trace of alarm. He's not leaving. He's hunting. The dragon that cannot fly goes mad. Even the mages at Corcanoth knew that. Every day he is escorted to the north, where he can hunt and enjoy the gift of flight. His freedom will be increased every day as he regains some semblance of himself. Galanor felt like a fool for rushing over. He looked at Gideon, but the mage was stroking the scaly hide between Ilargo's eyes, oblivious to their conversation. Perhaps he already knew of Maliath's daily jaunts through his connection to Ilargo. Rather awkwardly,
Galanor nodded his understanding and turned to leave. Ever the warrior and tactician, the elf found an idea forming in his mind. Perhaps he could lie in wait during one of Meliath's hunts, hiding within the debris and the mud. Then, when the black dragon returned, he wouldn't have to sneak into the clearing to converse. That thought vanished when he considered Meliath's size and weight. It was more likely that the dragon would return and land on top of him. Galanor sighed and strode into the forest. The elf could feel desperation creeping into his thoughts, planting schemes that most would consider irrational and dangerous. Desperation was not a good place for Galanor to be. Adelandra squeezed her hand until the knuckles turned white and her grip was that of a vice. Her elven strength was a magnitude above most humans, proving true in this very moment as she relinquished her latest bedmate of his life. The ugly Darkerkin struggled and clawed at her bare arms, but the elven queen continued to look ahead and tighten the vice. Adelandra had to be precise with her grip, ensuring that not a single gargle could escape his blue lips and alert the guards. The elf lifted her leg and rolled off the Darkerkin after hearing a crack inside his throat. The cold floor found her first as she battled the elixir of drugs still coursing through her veins. Finding the strength to strangle the savage had taken most of her energy. With her head leaning against the side of the bed, the queen sat there for a moment and focused her resolve. She had to escape. The goddess had continued to pass around the richer clans within their twisted society, always drugging her into submission. Adelandra was unsure of how many days and nights she had been fettered now, each day blending into the next. But the elixirs were beginning to lose their bite. It was only the gladiatorial matches that gave her any reprieve from the drugs. Adelandra brought a hand up to her face and balled it into a fist, testing her strength. Perhaps she was developing an immunity to the concoction of drugs. The elf could only dare to hope. Scrambling for her clothes, the queen was finally able to stand, though her newfound freedom was accompanied by overwhelming nausea and dizziness. Adelandra used the edges of the bed to walk around the room and make for the balcony, where the green crystal sat perched on a stand. She hated those crystals. In their presence, her magical connection was lost. Her greatest advantage over the humans had been taken from her by nothing more than a rock, and she had no idea how. Between the crystals and the drugs, she had been used time and time again as nothing more than a plaything. Before Adelandra could reach the crystal, however, the vomit in her stomach demanded attention. The reflex couldn't be helped, and the queen retched, spilling her guts across the floor. The doors were bursting open before she could clear the tears from her eyes. Bare feet padded into the room, with the harsh language of the Darkerkin shouting unintelligible words at her. It didn't matter. She just had to reach the crystal and launch it from the balcony. With it gone, her powers could return, and she could reduce the guards to charred corpses. On her hands and knees, Adelandra made a dash across the floor, ignoring the vomit beneath her. A swift kick to her ribs had her sprawled over the cold tiles and gasping in pain. A second kick, quickly followed by a third and fourth, brought pain and blood, but still the elf crawled across the floor. As her fingers touched the stand, numerous hands grabbed at her and lifted her from the floor. The stand wobbled, and the crystal fell to the floor, where it rolled ever closer to the balcony. Adelandra kicked out, trying to stall the inevitable club to the head, while watching the crystal roll towards the gap in the railing. With a prayer on the edge of her lips, she willed the crystal to drop, but a foot came to rest on top as it teetered on the lip. Adelandra followed the foot up an athletic leg, laced in tattoos, until her eyes rested on the goddess. The elf now found herself within the grip of four Darkerkin, who forced her to her knees with rough hands and serrated blades. "You have saved me the trouble, elf queen." The goddess flashed her wicked smile and picked up the crystal. "I was coming to kill Lord Six myself. He was only to have you for the night, not three. He refused my guards the right to bring you back." The goddess regarded the corpse of Six with disgust and pity. "He thought with my armies invading Ilion, I would be weak. Did your subjects test you so, old one?" Adelandra surged forwards in an attempt to break free and snapped the savage's neck, but eight strong arms coiled around her with python-like strength.
The goddess didn't flinch, but smiled all the wider.
"Are you hollow yet? Have we stripped you down and left you raw?"
The savage queen stroked Adalandra's cheek with the back of her hand. "You will be among my legacies. I will hand you down through the generations of my bloodline, each one breaking you again and again. When your gods give you strength and hope musters in your heart, the Darkerkin will be there to crush it."
Adalandra wanted to unleash the fury that had been building inside of her. She wanted to curse and spit and make promises of a bloody death to all Darkerkin, but that shouldn't be the elven way. Her husband, Elim, would have every elf behave in such a way and prove their superiority, but Adalandra refused to give in. She would be as her ancestors had been, and the faces of all those who had accompanied her on the pilgrimage to these lands flashed through her mind. Most were the faces they made upon their death at the hands of the Darkerkin. She saw Lorvana have her head removed by Overlord Ket, and Fallon slice his own throat under the influence of the goddess's elixirs. She saw Enaron be thrown from the balcony of the throne room as if he were nothing but a sack of wheat.
The queen's rage couldn't be denied any longer. "I will kill every last one of you," Adalandra screamed and pushed against the guards, putting their strength to the test.
"This city will be left a smoking ruin. Not a soul will escape Malaysai when I'm finished burning it to the ground."
The goddess laughed with glee.
"You're going to be perfect."
The Queen of Savages brought the hand-sized crystal down on Adalandra's head, robbing her of thought.
Chapter 23. Dark Tidings. The elves heard it first, as they would. The thunder of boots falling into the rhythm of a march. The scraping of armor against armor. Had the doors of Darkwell's theater been open, Tygarn was sure they would have inhaled their sweaty aroma, too. The elves looked at each other, keenly aware of the danger of moving through the streets, but it was Nalmar's tortured expression that raised the fine hairs on the back of Tygarn's neck. The elven companions were on their feet moments before the doors were forced open, and a stampede of soldiers in gold cloaks rushed into the theater. Their war cry and drawn weapons were clear signs of their intentions, and as Eric had an arrow flying across the theater before a single greycoat had found their sword. Lord Marshal Horvath exploded from his chair with Ned Fennec and Darius de Vale at his back, but all three were quickly set upon by the soldiers. There was no warning or questions asked by either side, just bloody battle. As Eric glided around the stage, firing arrows with envious speed and precision, every projectile delivering a fatal message. Hela and Alwyn waded in with their exquisite scimitars, bringing down the strange soldiers with every swipe and slash.
"Nalmar, with me!"
Tygarn rallied the elf and dropped from the stage with his staff at the ready. Destructive spells burst forth from the elder's staff and Nalmar's hands. Shields were cracked and swords melted by the magical attacks. Any who found their way past Tygarn's spells found their doom at the end of his enchanted staff.
"Traitors!"
the greycoats cried over the chaos. The elder unleashed a concussive spell so powerful it shattered a soldier's shield and blew the man backwards into three more of his brothers in arms. Bones were broken and flesh torn by the throng of limbs. The ancient elf looked about, between parrying blows and evading stray arrows, to see his kin, each enjoying themselves. Taking human lives was the very thing they had all been trained for, and they loved it. They reveled in their superiority over man, their strength and speed unmatched. Hela was even laughing through most of it.
"Die, traitor!"
The blonde greycoat known as Darius de Vale jumped in front of the elder and plunged his sword into the belly of a golden warrior, his blade piercing the mail and biting into the soft skin beneath.
"For King Tyon!" two gold cloaks shouted back, advancing on Darius. "For the north!"
Darius pulled on his sword, but found the blade wedged. Tygarn stepped between them and swiped his staff across both of their faces, knocking the gold cloaks down. Nalmar appeared from nowhere and finished them with an ice spell, reducing the soldiers to frozen blocks.
"Who are these men?"
Nalmar asked, seeing the soldiers flooding the upper levels of the theater now. "They are Makaris Tyon's men," Darius replied, tugging his sword free. Tygarn loosed another firebolt, wiping a soldier's face clean off.
"Was it not King Tyon who invited you here?"
There was no time for words, as more gold cloaks descended on them. Greycoats were starting to be overwhelmed, especially with many of their number still injured from the Battle of Westphalian. Tygon could see the fight shifting unfavorably. The cramped quarters of the theater made for terrible battlegrounds, offering advantage to the shield-bearing Northmen. The Greycoats, for all their skill and grace, had no room to maneuver, constantly facing the broad shields. The Lord Marshal and Ned Fenwick were being backed into a corner by a group of soldiers. The two men fought fiercely with venom in their veins, but their righteous anger would not save them from the spears and swords. Tygon made his move to help, when a savage cry from the balcony above gave him pause. The drunk Caleb Jourdain threw himself from the railing and landed atop the gold cloaks. The older man stumbled to his feet, though through some miracle his sword continued to bat away spears and even counter thrusting blades. He may be a drunk and dishonored knight, but his skill could never be taken from him. Tygon commended the ranger and used his staff to launch the remaining soldiers up into the ceiling, breaking their necks. Horvath and Fenwick eyed the old ranger, neither thanking nor rebuking him. Caleb didn't help himself by standing up, swiping the nearest tankard of ale, and downing it in one.
"Why have we been attacked?" Tygon shouted over the ruckus. "King Tyon has betrayed us."
Horvath wiped the blood from his mouth.
"But why?" the elder pressed. "If Tyon wants Greycoat blood, he must be planning an invasion. He doesn't want us stepping in. It must be Velia he desires. They have the largest army of all six kingdoms."
Tygon flicked his staff upwards and broke the jaw of an advancing soldier.
"Why would he attack the kingdom with the largest army? Surely he would seek to conquer the smallest regions first."
"You have never met King Tyon, my lord." "No," Tygon mused. But he had met his ancestor, the first of his name. He too had been ambitious and greedy, setting his sights upon the dragons and their treasured lifeless isles.
"Macaris Tyon would see Velia as the head of the snake," Horvath continued, almost every word between a parry or swipe of his sword. "He has but to win the one battle, and the other kingdoms would fall into line with Velia under his banner."
Tygon's companions had rallied to him now, cutting a bloody path across the theater. The elder noticed the other soldiers giving them a wide berth, as well as a few greycoats who now clung to the elves. Nalmar placed a heavy hand on Tygon's shoulder, and the elder followed his gaze to the theater's entrance. Nalmar had felt it first, but the magical aura emanating from the doorway could not be ignored by any of the elves. A cold pit opened up inside Tygon's gut. A lithe figure clad in black and gold armor stood as a sentinel, with the light of dawn breaking over her cloaked silhouette. A dark hood covered her head, and a stylized veil concealed her mouth and nose. The shadowy figure held a spear upright, each end housing a curved blade with an edge of diamond. Tygon had seen that weapon before, and the one who wielded it. Simandril Zathiah, a general in the Dark War and devoted disciple of Valinus. The twisted elf had been a member of the Hand since the beginning, and was responsible for the deaths of countless innocents, many of which had been Tygon's friends and family. Simandriel's golden eyes blazed from within her hood, and the elder was sure she was trying to delve into his mind. The general sought to plant fear in him, driving him from battle and securing the northerner's victory. Tygon could not be so easily swayed. The elder made for the dark elf, and his companions fell into line behind him, as if the maneuver had been practiced. More soldiers died at the end of their blades and spells, none strong enough to halt their progress. After Tygon had blown the last soldier from his path, the doorway was empty.
"She's outside," Nalmar confirmed.
The elves drew together, leaving the greycoats to their heated battle. Simandriel was a foe no man could stand against, though Tygon was led to dwell on Asher, the elusive ranger. By Phelan's report, both the ranger and another greycoat had fought against the Delambovo and lived. Still, the elder would face the general with his kin at his side. The light of dawn was cresting the rooftops, casting stark shadows in the early morning. The streets were deserted, and for good reason. There was no doubt that the battle inside the theater had woken the entire town, if not the marching battalion. The elves naturally fell into formation, with their backs to one another, their keen senses taking in the world.
"Was that who I think it was?" Zerik asked.
"There was only one who wielded a spear of that description," Alwyn offered, referring to the tales of old that all elves were brought up on. It occurred to Tygon then
how young these elves were. The Dark War was a story to them, the death toll and bloodshed, impossible to truly understand. Fighting for them had been a game, until now. Without a sound, Sumandriel dropped from above the doorway and brought her double-ended spear down vertically. Alwyn died instantly as the diamond-tipped blade cut a line from the top of his head down to the base of his back, severing his spinal column. The elves reacted immediately and turned on the general, but Sumandriel's defenses were already up. Tygon's superheated spell exploded against the Dark Elf's magical shield, erected by an outstretched hand, and blinded the others. The Elder regretted his attack, but had no time to dwell upon its failure, or indeed, the death of Alwyn, for a swift sidekick found his sternum and launched him down the street. Tygon tumbled and used what elven grace he had left to land on his feet. Sumandriel was a demon among the elves, however. Her spear kept them at bay before coming back down on their blades with deadly intent. Hela flew around the general with both of her scimitars probing for any vulnerability, and more than once her swords found flesh, but nothing could slow the Dark Elf down. Tygon was old enough to predict some of Sumandriel's attacks and see where her spear would fly next, and so the elder dived into action, sprinting down the street, where he intercepted the curved tip of the general's blade before it cut Nalmar in half. His enchanted staff took the blow, jarring his hand and wrist as he struggled to keep it aloft. When Sumandriel twirled away, the elf glanced at his staff and tried to hide his surprise at the fresh cut that would forever scar the wood. Tygon wasn't aware of any weapon that could damage his staff. As Eric and Hela pincered the general between their combined attack, hoping to overwhelm their foe, Sumandriel proved the superior opponent and bowed her body, extending the spear ahead of her while bringing her legs out behind her. The leg caught Azeric in the gut and forced the air from his lungs, but the spear found its end deep inside Hela's chest. By the time Azeric had rolled to a stop, Sumandriel was already sliding her spear clean from Hela's chest and allowing her limp body to collapse in a heap. "It has been a long time since I've taken the life of an elf." Sumandriel twirled her spear by her side and stalked around the survivors. "You would kill your own kin and take pleasure from it?" Tygon knew it was folly to barter words, but he could never be rid of that hope that lay inside his soul, a hope for every elf. Sumandriel laughed to herself. "I see no kin of mine." The general looked down at Hela and Alwyn. "You are 1,000 years behind the times. You should have embraced your true nature before the Dark War. Maybe then we could have cleansed Vera together and embraced the gods upon their return." "Gods?" Nalmar exclaimed, his anger easy to hear. "Madness has claimed you just as it did Valinus." "Take care, young one." Samandriel's eyes were fixed on him. Tygon stepped forward, wishing to regain her attention. "You say return? You believe the gods have already been here?" Sumandriel laughed again. "You will find no answers here. Valinus offered you all a chance to be a part of his vision. You declined and chose war instead." The general adjusted her grip on the magical spear, giving away her intent. "Besides, you are moments from death. The gods will answer your questions personally." "I can wait." Tygon hadn't been interested in any of Sumandriel's words. He simply needed to distract her while his spell took effect. The dark cloud that had formed from nowhere was now over Sumandriel, its presence blocking out the new sun. With one knock of his staff against the ground, the cloud delivered its payload of charged energy. The lightning struck the Dark Elf with the speed and unbridled ferocity that only nature could muster. Tygon shielded his eyes from the flash, only catching a glimpse of Sumandriel, who was hurtled down the street. As Eric joined the Elder and Nalmar, as they cautiously approached the prone form, draped under a black cloak. Tygon put his arms out to stop them from advancing, when Sumandriel stirred and slowly rose to her feet. Her armor and hood were smoking and burnt, the stylized veil across her mouth ruined. Still she smiled. "You do not possess the power or weapon to undo the magic that fuels me." Tygon looked beyond the general to the doorway of the theater. "Perhaps we do not, but I think we have enough blades to pin you down while we find such a weapon." Sumandriel turned around, pain evident across her face, and looked upon the amassing greycoats. Lord Marshal Horvath strolled out with his knights at his back, everyone brandishing their one-handed swords, stained with the blood of Northmen. Mixed within them was Caleb Jourdain, a sword in one hand and a bottle in the other.
"I do not know who you are," Horvath spoke boldly, "but you can run back to King Macaris Tyon and tell him this betrayal will be answered for. You tell him that it will take more than a battalion of soldiers to end the Greycoats."
Tamandriel stood her spear against the ground.
"I do not serve mortals. You can give your message to Macaris when his army marches over you."
Tygon glimpsed the smallest of glimmers within Tamandriel's hand.
The elder moved to stop her, but she was too quick, especially so for someone who had just been struck by lightning.
The crystal shot from her hand and exploded into a portal in front of the Greycoats, shocking them into stepping back. Tamandriel dashed for the portal of pure black, a clear limp in her left leg. Tygon stopped short of the portal and extended his staff with a spell on his lips, drawing more strength into the magic. A fireball erupted from the end and passed through the abyss with the general. Wherever she was going, he had no doubt that the destructive spell would find her. The portal collapsed in on itself, leaving a crowd of surprised Greycoats. Only Caleb Jourdain stood unaffected by the display of magic, though it was possible his blink lasted longer than the entire event. A quiet settled over the group of knights, and the elves regarded their dead kin. Hela and Alwyn were drenched in their own blood, as lifeless as the street on which they lay. As Eric brushed Hela's red hair aside and stroked her cheek, while Nalmar closed Alwyn's eyes and uttered a curse upon Tamandriel. Tygon offered a silent prayer on their behalf, his faith ever a secret. He would mourn their passing in time, thankful that he had never got to know them on a deeper level. They had journeyed together, but he had only met the group of elves upon High Guardian Varro's introduction. Besides, there were more troubling things to set his mind to. The elder turned to Azeric.
"Why would Tamandriel Zathaya be leading a battalion of Tyon soldiers?"
"It is as King Elim feared. Valinus has taken control of man's armies." Valinus was playing a game that Tygon was yet to fathom. It troubled the elf beyond words.
"I am sorry for your loss, Master Elf." Horvath sheathed his sword, his words hollow.
"These treacherous bastards have claimed many Greycoats this day, more than our order can take, I fear." Tygon ignored the marshal's comments and addressed Caleb Jourdain. "You say Princess Rhaena has gone south, to the arid lands?"
Caleb swigged his bottle and wiped his moustache.
"To Carath, I think."
"Show us the way and you will be rewarded," Tygon offered.
"I am already owed a reward."
Caleb took another swig.
"Nathaniel Galfrey owes me a bag of coins the size of my fist."
"Galfrey?"
Darius de Vale asked, his blonde hair matted with blood.
"He lives? The stupid bugger paid me to come and warn you. Keep an eye on you," Caleb shrugged.
"I couldn't tell you why. From what I could gather, he wasn't exactly appreciated by you self-righteous bastards, much like myself."
"If Galfrey is alive, he is no longer a Greycoat," Ned Fennec announced. "He sided with the assassin."
Caleb snorted.
"Well, if he hadn't sent me, you and the Lordly over there would be dead."
Horvath reached for his sword again.
"You were not..."
Tygon stamped his staff into the ground and generated the smallest of sparks between the wood and the ground, adding an ear-piercing crack to his protest.
"A guide through Ilion would make our journey swifter."
Tygon's gaze continued to rest upon the dead elves at his feet.
Lord Marshal Horvath stepped into the middle of the street. "Master Elf, our destination should be Velia. You heard the..."
The Greycoat struggled to define Tamandriel.
"Tyon's forces are on the march. The other kingdoms should be warned. A raven from King Rengar will carry the weight required to convince the other monarchs of Tyon's betrayal."
Azeric stood up from Hela's body.
"We did not cross the Aedean to get involved in your feuds."
Tygon held up his hand, sensing the elf's aggravation.
"Valinus has a hand in this."
The elder looked through Azeric, lost in contemplation.
"The swiftest route to the arid lands is the Selk Road," Horvath continued.
"Accompany us south, and we shall part ways at Velia, though King Rengar would benefit greatly from your recounting here." Tygon could see that Azeric and Nalmar wanted to go their own way, without the knights who were famous for their part in the Dragon War. The elder could see the benefit in traveling with the small army, however, especially with Valinus's spies in Ilion. Ultimately, it was the echoes of fate